Good morning on Tuesday, December 8th, 2015. My name is Brian Madden, and you are listening to a BrianMadden.com podcast. I am sitting in my office in San Francisco. We're joined via Skype by Gabe from Omaha. Hello, Gabe.
Hello.
And we're also joined, our guest today is Claudio Rodriguez, who I assume is joining us today from the Great White North. Is that correct?
That's it. And yeah. Cold. Yes.
Yeah. So Claudio, as you can tell by his accent, is Canadian.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. How did you end up? So, you know, Claudio, I think a lot of people know you. You've been, you were one of our very first Bri Forum speakers back in 2005. I got to know you because you were actually an MVP before me. I think back when I kind of found out what the MVP program was in 2000 and 2001, there was two Terminal Server MVPs, and you were an MVP, I think, since the beginning with Terminal Server. Is that right?
Yeah. I was like the first one. So I had these lonely meetings with the product, you know, the product groups.
Just and even back then, were you just telling him it was shit?
Oh, yeah.
Back then, you know, they were only not listening to one person instead of not listening to 20 people.
Exactly. They have known it's all shitty since 2001, so long time.
But let me – so Claudio, I don't know if I ever asked you this. You know, a lot of people know you. You blog on WTS Labs. You are, you know, C-Rod on Twitter. But you're Brazilian originally, but you live in Canada. You've always lived in Canada as long as I've known you. So how in the world did you make it from Brazil to Canada?
Well, you know, it was, you know, really hot weather and hot women and cheap booze. I don't like that, so I said, let me find a place where we don't have anything like that. And that's how I ended up in Canada. Well, but seriously, it was just a job, you know. Yeah. Citrix, actually, Citrix-related stuff back in the day. And job offer, I took it. And that's how I ended up in Canada.
That was a long time ago.
That was 1999, like early 99.
Where were you before that?
I was living sort of in São Paulo in Brazil.
Okay.
But I was working for a company that had like offices in Florida. So I was really back and forth between São Paulo and Miami.
So let's take a step back, and we, you know, there's a lot of stuff I want to talk about today. You wrote a great blog post about a week ago, I think, around sort of Citrix and that kind of stuff. And I know you would with the CTP meeting with Gabe last week, and I want to catch up on all that. But the first thing is, I'm curious just about, you know, you've been around a long time. I don't think we ever talked with you. How did you get your start, both not even in the Citrix and IT world, but, you know, growing up, how did you become a computer nerd?
Well, it probably started like in high school. I had like computer classes, like programming classes. That's how I started with computers. Well, I started before that, but, you know, doing development, it was in high school. And before that, it was just messing around with computers, like the Sinclairs, if you remember then, the ZX81s, mm-hmm. like really old stuff. And then, as I said, high school, I got some programming classes, so got into programming. And then in university, I took electrical engineering, so I have a degree on that. In microelectronics specifically, and then, you know, we were doing everything on computers and simulations, and that's how I ended up getting into computers. But then it was how you switch from being an electrical engineer into a nerd, a computer guy. That was during an internship at a major like electrical company. They had lots of issues on how to create big spreadsheets at the time using, I think it was LOT or something, maybe Symfony. Yeah, that was a long time ago. And then I was, you know, as I said, I had a background in programming in a certain way, and I ended up creating all these crazy spreadsheets for them, and that's how I ended up in IT, because then they knew, oh, this guy can make all these fancy spreadsheets, so he probably knows something about Windows and networks and whatever. So I became the IT guy.
Did you like that change? Because to me, it seems like microelectronics and electrical engineering is like cool, and IT is kind of, I don't know. Electronics seems cooler than IT to me.
Oh, I agree with you. But the problem is back in the day, you know, it was a choice of being cool and, you know, not eating that well and you know, and not being that cool doing IT and eating really well. So I decided to, oh, this IT, you know, stuff pays money.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll stay here, man.
So, you know, in the early days, like you said, I first knew about you from is that you were an MVP with Terminal Server. And then you went on to create a bunch of tools for Terminal Server and you sold that company. And that's a whole different story. But
I think that's when I became aware of you. You had a load balancing. You had like an RDP load balancing product that I can't remember the name of it, and like a TS gateway or something like that.
TS load balancer.
Yeah.
How'd you get from IT? How'd you get from spreadsheet guy to Terminal Server?
Well, the thing is, like early 90s, first I worked for Compaq, you know, that HP later acquired, and I was doing server support, so server OS, specifically OS 2 back in the day. So, you know, just dealing with servers most of my time and specifically with OS 2. And of course, Citrix had an OS 2 based product.
Multi-user.
That was, yeah, WinView and so on. And that's how I got into knowing Citrix. And then it was just, you know, from there it was just moving from WinView to InFrame to MetaFrame and so on. So that's how I ended up on the server-based computing world.
So you are one of the few people, I mean, you know, I got involved with Citrix in 97 around the WinFrame time. I think you're probably one of the maybe the only person who I actually know who actually got started in the OS2 WinView multi-user days.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Or maybe Steven Greenberg is another guy that has been around for a very long time.
Oh, yeah. That's the only other person I could think of. Yeah, because Steve, even if he wasn't doing it, he was definitely aware of it. And, you know, when I got in, I knew WinFrame. I'd never played with it. It was always somebody else's thing. And so I was MetaFrame 1.0. And, yeah. But even that makes me sound old, but not compared to you. So I feel better now.
Yeah, WinFrame was, you know, was cool back in the day.
And then, okay, so you, I can assume, you know, obviously then you're aware of that. You know, we all remember sort of 97, 98 as Microsoft, you know, codename Hydra, then NT4 Terminal Server Edition, and the whole thing about what Citrix, you know, Citrix was making the MetaFrame add-on product on top of Microsoft, and all the conversations about, is Microsoft good enough on its own? Do you need to buy Citrix? And there are some advantages that Citrix had. And that's when, at some point around that time, you started writing add-on products to Terminal Server so that instead of buying Citrix, you could use vanilla Terminal Server, but then, you know, use your RDP gateway or your load balancer or your app publishing.
Yeah, exactly. That was exactly it. You know, working as a consultant in Canada, what happened was people, well, like today, people were buying Citrix, the whole whatever it was back in the day. And then they were like, oh, but I just want to use this because I'm publishing a full desktop. I don't do published applications. So I just need to really get the load balancing portion of Citrix up and running. And other people were like, yeah, I need that, but I also need published applications, but I don't need anything else. So I realized that, well, these people are buying this big product that has all these features, but they are really using like one or two or three, maybe most of the customers. So that's when I realized that, well, if I break this up into little pieces and I do it for RDP, for Terminal Server, where there is nothing like that, we may have something, you know? And that's the first thing we did. We did the load balancer. That was that simple, very easy to use. The first resource-based load balancer ever for RDP. And it just took off from there. Like everyone started basically using the load balancer.
Because I remember in those days, you could base it on it was on
sessions,
perp on counters, right?
Yeah, perp on counters, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And you sold it per server, right? It was cheap. So instead of buying, you know, even back then it was, you know, $200 per user for MetaFrame, I think you were selling it for, what, like $100 a server or something like that? And that's
yeah,
it?
Yeah, we were selling for, I think it was like $200 for two servers and then each additional RDS you would pay another $100.
Yeah.
So it was that cheap compared to Citrix, where people had to buy the full suite and pay big bucks on a per user basis.
Yeah.
I remember deploying it, you know, and I think I was in suburban Atlanta somewhere and deploying it and emailing you, like you, for support. And I thought it was so cool because I was used to dealing with like huge faceless Citrix and having to like do support calls. And here I just get to email Claudio and, you know, get some support with it. I'm sure it was my fault, not you.
Yeah, probably.
The terminal, so it's called terminalservices.net was the company. And were you at the time still doing, were you still employed somewhere, still doing consulting, or was writing the software your full-time job?
No, I was still employed. Through my own company, that's when I started my own consulting business, because what had happened with the company I was working for in Canada. So then I had my consulting company, and on the side, we were doing the terminalservices.net. That was, in a certain way, as well consulting, because I was doing the RDS, the terminal server consulting, through that company, and doing the Citrix world through my Canadian company, the consulting business.
And then, so you grew over time, you know, so you had the load balancer as just a standalone product. And then, like I said, I know later on you added a gateway, an RDP gateway. You added application publishing and maybe similar things.
Yeah, the load balancer was always a gateway. So it was a gateway and load balancer. And, of course, we added SSL, so it could be single port and SSL all the way in. So we had our own client to allow SSL and go through proxies and all that. And then we added application publishing with the seamless Windows shell. We also added a profile solution that no one had. So we were probably the first company doing a profile like a UPM or a VUEM, you know, with SQL and everything. That was back in 2004, the profiles product.
And then eventually, so as the product grew, and I know you had some pretty good size customers who were using that. It was not, I think the customer use was a lot more than, you know, one guy in Canada. you think from that. But then you ended up selling that company, right?
Yep. Yeah. We had some pretty cool customers. One that I really liked to work with was the JPL, the Jet Propulsion Labs that makes the rockets for NASA.
Mm-hmm.
That was one, and, you know, big, big names. And that's when 2X back in the day, 2005, they approached us and they basically acquired the company.
And then since then, by the way, 2X has been acquired by Parallels. And so now it's Parallels Remote Access Solution. That's based on the code that you wrote, you know, 10 years ago.
That's it. So now Parallels is, you know, owns 2X. And a lot of our stuff still lives there, you know. That's pretty cool.
And then what have you been doing in the meantime? Just still doing consulting and that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. I never stopped it. Even back in the day with the company, the main reason to keep the consulting business was really not to have a disconnect between what customers wanted in a product and the product itself. Because that's one thing that I see today with many companies, especially like, you know, Citrix and other ones. These people are creating all these monsters and really they are taking barely any input from customers. And that's why many of the products suck big time in many different ways. So I never wanted that to happen. So I was doing the consulting, of course, to pay the bills and have extra income and whatever reason. But the main reason was to always be in touch with the real world, what I think these people lack a lot today.
So let's shift gears a little bit. I want to talk about your blog post that you wrote about a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
If this blog, if you haven't seen it, I'll throw a link in the chat. It is called Citrix, Where Did It Go Wrong?
Yeah.
And you mentioned a few things. I wonder, like, what sort of inspired you to write that? I mean, there's been a lot of talk about Citrix in the last, 6 months or so, but you know, what do you have to offer to this conversation?
Well, the reason for writing first was you saw a lot of stuff about Elliot, right? Everyone was talking about Elliot, and Elliot is the devil and they are evil. Okay, they may be. They are in ways I can bet. But the thing is, Citrix, they put themselves into that spot. Like, it wasn't really Elliot or anyone else that said, you know, we're going to screw you. You are screwed. No, that didn't happen. It was Citrix over time. They put themselves right there. And then I was like, well, I think I have to write what my view on this whole thing is, because I have a background in creating things and dealing with customers on a daily basis. And I think I can bring something new to the table. And that's when I said, okay, let me sit down and write about it. And it was funny because, as I mentioned on the blog post, I had a dream like the night before. More like a nightmare, you know, with Citrix. And I'm like, you know, what the hell is going on? Just had this horrible nightmare when I was talking to Citrix, you know. And I put two words, what I guess I did on my dream or nightmare.
And so talk about that. You listed, I think, four things about...
Yeah, the first one was really, you know, it's about forward thinking, right? Because we saw a ton of their acquisitions in the past year or two or three, whatever you want to look into. But a lot of stuff is stuff that people don't even know what it is. Like, if you ask 10 people, what did Byte Mobile had when Citrix acquired them? I can bet either 9 or all 10 will have no clue about what that was.
Yeah. All right. Oh, it's MDM. No. Oh, it's Enterprise Mobility?
Yeah.
No.
So no one really. Okay, they acquired something called Byte Mobile.
Maybe I didn't even know they acquired Byte Mobile, you know, and then. Yeah. And then I hear that they're going to sell off Byte Mobile. I'm like thinking, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and, you know, knows about it.
And then they also acquired these things that they shoved down our throat, like Podio, for example.
Yeah, exactly. And there is cool stuff in all these acquisitions, like Octoblue. I like Octoblue. But one thing is, when you acquire all these next wave businesses, you are betting on them and so on. And that's all great and good for the company. But when you go to like a keynote or a show and all you can see about that company that is selling stuff today is stuff they may sell in 5 years from now,
mm-hmm.
then you have a problem.
Yeah, because you walk away from the keynote not with, okay, you have laid out my plan for how I'm going to execute in the next 12 months. But instead, it's look at this cool stuff we bought.
Look at how I lit up this Tesla.
In 5 years,
yeah.
Something here might be relevant to your job.
And it would be fine if, you know, if Octoblue was an acqui-hire, you know, to hire on guys like Chris Matthew and Geir Ramlith and things like that. But, you know, if they wanted to get those people, that's one thing. But then, I mean, Citrix was, you know, they're trying to turn Octoblue into something. I mean, otherwise they wouldn't have them on stage at keynotes and have, you know, Octoblue booths set up at Synergy and things like that. So, you know, they buy these companies and then, like you said, they're not, I wouldn't say they're shoving Octoblue down our throats or anything, but, you know, they're promoting the fact that they acquired these companies.
Well, the other thing is...
Not in the case of Byte Mobile, but certainly in the case of Octoblue and Podio.
You know, they did not earn the right to buy weird companies, you know? So if Octoblue, if Citrix had just knocked it out of the park with their acquisitions over the years, and then they bought Octoblue and they're like, hey, trust us, this may seem weird now, but it's going to be cool. We'd be like, yeah, that sounds good. But, you know, Octoblue is kind of the poster child for this, but Octoblue is, you know, the 10th non-core acquisition they did in the past 3 years, you know? So it's not like they had the stellar reputation of, you know, to pick these diamonds in the rough.
Yeah, I mean, they had Netscaler and Expert City were like the two big win acquisitions, and the rest of them have been
and even Expert City
non-core.
Yeah,
but they were successful with it.
You could argue, right? Yeah, but because they bought a successful unrelated company and basically didn't fuck it up. And
yeah,
you could argue the same for Netscaler, because really, you know, I'm not like Netscaler is great; everyone loves it. But what they did with Netscaler is they now, you know, forced their core products, you know, Zen Apps, Zen Desktop, they force features that people want to require NetScaler. And so now that maybe people also have other platforms, you know, application delivery controllers or whatever you want to call them, that Citrix just doesn't integrate with as well. And so you can say, oh, look at what NetScaler, the cool stuff it does with Zen App, Zen Desktop. I'm not denying that. I'm just saying, why doesn't it do that with, you know, all the platforms that are out there?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, exactly.
Okay, so Claudio, so too much forward thinking was one of the things. You also wrote about bad apples.
Well, you know, you always have bad apples at the office, you know. If you work in a big company, there is no way you can always hire great people. You are going to hire a bunch of, you know, dumbasses. That's for sure. The problem is when we start hiring dumbasses at C-level positions, well, then you have a problem. Because the dumbass that is at a higher position, he will probably bring his friends that are probably all dumbasses as well into the lower positions. And now all of a sudden, you have something full of dumbasses. And in a way, that's what happened at Citrix. There is still a lot of great people there. But, you know, if the great people are like 3-4 levels down the food chain, well, they can't do much, right? And the results, I guess they speak for themselves. We don't need to cover what happened to Citrix in the past 2 years. They screwed up and they know that. And we don't need to be under NDA to know they realized and they told everyone, yes, we screwed up.
You know, that's interesting. That's a good segue because you talk about in the blog post about, you know, people who just surf the latest hype, and you talk about, you know, Citrix sort of competing with the channel and forcing people to VMware. But people can read the blog post for those details. I want to segue into, you know, you saying Citrix, they know they screwed up. And you and Gabe were at the CTP meeting last week in Fort Lauderdale. And one of the things that's primarily an NDA, you know, there's a lot of NDA conversations. So you know, we won't go into that kind of stuff. But, you know, I talked to Gabe when he was flying back and just kind of asked him how the meeting was. And he said, I think if you remember this, Gabe, I mean, he said, like, you know, their focus on the core is legit.
Yeah, so I got the impression that the focus on the core is – I think we had more conversation about core stuff than we've had in the past. And without going into too much detail, I mean, I feel like they were really good conversations. And then to your point there about the hype surfing, Claudio, I feel like there was less hype in there. You know, sometimes we get people talk to us about, you know, new things that they're thinking about doing and then they're not asking us if they should do it. They're just telling us about it. And now I had a really good just feeling coming out of that meeting that there was less hype that they were buying into, and they were, I believe that they are actually refocusing on core. I don't know if you have the same sentiment coming out of there or not.
Oh yeah, exactly the same. And we kind of had in the previous meeting as well, they realized that they have to stay focused on what made them what they are today. So that's all about the core. And I do believe we are going to see much better and much greater things coming out of them in the next 6 or 12 months. It's all about the core. And as I said, they realize that.
Yeah, I think a lot of that will just be making customers happy, you know, by completing visions that maybe haven't been have been ignored over the past few years. And some of the hype is just because of the constant competition from VMware. You know, they kept trying to one up each other, and of course that still continues to happen, but falling prey to the hype just results in lots of bad decisions. And I really have the idea that it's not the case anymore. And if you look around the room, you talk about bad apples. If you look around the room when we were there, it was all the same faces that we were used to seeing that were good at executing on the core, you know, over the past 10 or 15 years. And so I think they've got the right people in place to do that. Now, I'm not saying that I'm glad that Citrix laid off people. Like, that's not cool. That always sucks when that happens. But it appears that they've retained the people that are that have always been focused on the Citrix core, and then told them, hey, you stop doing all these other things that we had you doing. Like, go back and do the thing that you were awesome at. And that's a good decision in my mind.
Oh yeah, and even on the forward thinking stuff, you know, we're not going to mention anything that was or is under NDA, but you could see like the OctoBlue stuff and everything. They are really now focused on making all these new technologies work with the existing core technologies. How can I use this to make my Zen app, my Zen desktop, my NetScaler deployments, you know, better and automated and so on? And we saw a lot of really cool stuff showing the forward thinking stuff, but it's still being applicable to the real world product that is selling today, you know?
Yeah, and we got a sneak preview of that Workspace Hub thing at Synergy earlier this year. And that's the kind of thing that we're talking about. And that stuff is cool. I feel bad for the OctoBlue guys who, and I would say this to their face. So, I feel bad for them because they had this really awesome job where they could just do whatever they wanted to, and just whatever cool thing crept into their mind, they just got to go do it. It was like in a playground, and now they're at Citrix and they're like, yeah, if you could somehow make this thing client automatically log in and, you know, based on what smart card just walked in the room, that'd be great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So hopefully they're still giving those guys sandbox time to keep them happy.
I hope so.
But there are a lot of use cases for it, and I think that rather than trying to flail about and, you know, try to find uses for what it does, they're more on the other side of saying, okay, we have all these customers asking for these things, and they've been asking for them for 15 years, and we haven't been able to do them. How can we use this technology to enable that? Rather than saying, look, now you can automatically, you know, send your notes off to somebody after a meeting is over, like, you know, because they were in the room. And, you know, there's things that we didn't need or things that we already have processes for. And there's things that were actual legitimate needs in the world that didn't have any answer. And I think that's what they're moving towards. They're going to focus on those. And that's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
There's that expression I'm just reminded of. Nothing focuses the mind like the hangman's noose.
Yeah, that's basically how we write articles here. We wait until it's our day to write, or the day before our day to write, and then we write articles.
Yeah.
So Claudio, what do you want to see out of Citrix? You know, given their focus on core, okay, that's a generic statement. You know, if you're Citrix, if you're CEO and you have also like ultimate power to do whatever you want, what do you like? What do you not like? What do you want to do?
Well, what I would do, like, you know, not saying the same stuff again, it's the core. The bottom line is they know what their customers are doing. You know, when you sell licenses, it doesn't matter what name you give to these licenses, you know what people are actually deploying and using these licenses for and the problems they are having. So for me, it's all about first getting touch with the customers in better ways, listen to the customers, and of course stop screwing around with your partners. You know, your partner it's your partner. It's not like it's someone you're gonna be fucking up over and over and over again. You don't do that, and they kept doing that for years. So again, listen to customers and make sure you rely on your partners all the time. They are the ones that made you great in the past, and they are, you know, these partners, man, if I were like a big partner, I probably would have left like Citrix a long time ago. And you see how loyal these people are? Like, they have been screwed over and over and over, and they still love the product and they want to sell the product. So man, can't get better than that as a channel. Like, use these people. Make sure they are happy.
Yeah, it's something we haven't been plugged into for a while just because, you know, I mean, we used to be channel partners. We know what that's like. But hearing all the things that have happened over the years from, you know, we've still got some good friends that are in that area. I mean, I just can't believe that they're still with Citrix after all these things. And so, I mean, I guess that says a lot about the loyalty that Citrix has built over the years. But I feel like every year people complain and Citrix says, okay, we're listening, and then nothing happens. And it sounds like that's gotten better the last couple of years, but it's nowhere near what it used to be. Are you a partner?
Yeah. One thing I would do, honestly, as a CEO, I would enforce something on the onboarding process of employees, especially developers and product managers, you know, these type of people. First week on the job, I'll give you a fucking CD-ROM with the whole product, and you're going to make this shit work. And I want to see what you tell me about the product after trying to make it work and using it for like a week or two. It would change the vision they have on their own stuff. Like, you know, these people, they think it's all great and, oh, no, the product is easy. Well, it's easy because you never use it, because you never install it. Anything is easy. Working on my car is easy if I never have to open the engine. All I do is put gas and oil on the car. Well, that doesn't mean the car is easy. And that's the problem. So make the onboarding like you are going to use everything. We're going to eat our own dog food for a week or two. And I can bet they're going to deliver better products after that.
How does Workspace Cloud affect you as a partner? Since a lot of the transaction is going directly to Citrix, do you as a partner still get to be involved in the integration, or is a transaction going through you as a partner?
Well, not really. I guess it gets down to certain verticals and, you know, industry segments. In my case, because of clearance and all that stuff, I end up working a lot with like federal government and military and stuff like that. So for these people, certain things or certain trends on the market, they are either like completely relevant as of today, or even if they are relevant, they can't do or touch anything for years because of the whole process to validate, to design. You know the deal dealing with government. That's why it takes 8 hours to get a driver's license at the MTO or DMV. Because they're just as low. Like
at the MTO.
MTO is the Minister of Transport in Canada. Or the DMV. That's the equivalent in the US. They are always low. Doesn't matter where they are. They should be called, Minister of Slowness or something.
Minister of Line Standing.
What do you like, exactly. Claudio, from the technology standpoint? Do you like CWC?
Oh, I like it. But my whole thing with them, and I told Citrix about that, I see CWC as something that at one point will make the transition between on or off premises to on premises completely transparent. It has to get to a point where people don't have to think about if it's here or anywhere else. You know what I mean? Like the same way I do on premises, at one point has to be exactly how it's done off premises, because then that barrier from on to off is removed. Then it really becomes a matter of location.
That's a good follow-up from right before this podcast. I was on a webcast, I guess, with T-Systems in Germany, and Benny Trish was there, and T-Systems has just been announced as sort of being the, what would I call it, like record keeper for Azure in Germany. So T-Systems, it's sort of guaranteed it's going to be on, their servers in country, and they're managing the security and the access and all that kind of stuff. Which, by the way, is a side note. Someone asked the question, hey, is that only available to German citizens? Like, can I as an American buy Azure but guarantee it's in Germany?
Yeah.
But anyway, one of the guys asked about the hybrid cloud and how long I foresee being this hybrid cloud till we fully go into the actual cloud. And I answered by saying, I don't like the term hybrid cloud. To me, the cloud is the hybrid cloud. Like, that's the whole point of cloud, is it does not or should not matter whether my apps, data, et cetera, is on my servers or your servers or the employees' servers or my basement or my phone or my whatever. It just that's just kind of the way it works. That's just called the cloud. And I think I from CWC, that's sort of what that is. Like I almost like CWC as not even the temporary point of, hey, this helps integrate temporarily while we have one foot in both, you know, on and off premises, but rather this is just the way it works.
Yeah, yeah. But what I'm also mentioning is it's like you had the conversation with Benny. I don't know how much you guys talk about Azure and the remote app stuff. But if you look at Era, the remote app, whatever that you have to do to get a remote app going in Azure, it's completely different than how you do it on premises. Mm. And that's a big problem. For me, it's like in the future, I hope Citrix will get to a point, and Microsoft, hopefully, even though they never listen and they keep coming up with, you know, garbage, but that's a different story. Citrix has to get to a point where if I want to do on-premises on my servers, it has to be the exact same look and feel and procedure if I want to do on CWC or anywhere else. It's just a point. Okay, point here, you do on my servers. Point there, you do in the cloud. Has to be identical. That's when I truly believe we are going to see crazy adoption. Because for people, it will be the exact same way of doing things, just pointing at a different place. It's like driving a car. You drive your car, well, you can drive your girlfriend's car. It's a car. It's the same thing. You don't have to think about it. But now if I have to think, oh, that car, man, it has, you know, a weird gearbox that no one knows how to shift, well, then we have a problem. It has to be
the steering wheels on the other side, and you have to shift with your left hand.
Yeah, you know what? Yes, no, I had that. Like back in the day when I had a car, I had a Saab, and the ignition key is in the center console, not the steering wheel, and you have to put it in reverse to get the key out. And in order to go to reverse, there's a hidden collar you have to pull up.
Shift left, I remember
that. Go way left and way forward, and then get the key out. And I had so many people come to me, like when they would go move my car or something like that, and be like, I can't get the key out. So, yeah, that's a great point. That's a good article, by the way. So you should blog that, or if not, blog it on our website, or if not, we'll blog about it on our website.
Oh, yeah.
To be the same. Let me ask you this. So the question I asked about Citrix, let me ask the same question for Microsoft. You know, if you're Microsoft, and I guess I'm not just asking in the context of, you know, RDSH and that sort of thing, but it could be more broadly speaking too. You know, what do you want to see Microsoft do?
Well, I think Microsoft, and probably Gabe can comment on that as well, but I think they are actually doing a much better job in that respect than a lot of companies out there. And you can see that with, for example, the Azure services, the one that you bring basically Azure in-house.
Mm-hmm.
So they are trying to really reduce that gap between what is out their own cloud, Azure, and what is in, you know, inside mm-hmm. your data center. So they are really focused on making it completely seamless. I don't think the remote desktop guys are listening to that internally or to even us, because again, they keep doing, oh, it's Azure, we are going to do a crazy way, it's on premises, it's going to be completely different, just to screw everyone up. But Microsoft as a company, I think they are truly interested in bridging that gap and make it completely seamless to anyone to run their stuff anywhere. And how you get there, it will be the same mm-hmm. way no matter the location. I think they are in good shape.
Yeah, the new Microsoft, we've been calling it. I mean, it's just such a different world now. And yeah, you're at the Azure stack, I think is what you're talking about. Being able to keep your you have the cloud. You can keep this stuff on prems to satisfy your own reasons, your own corporate reasons, whatever those happen to be, for keeping this stuff local to you. But you're still taking advantage of cloud from a scalability and from a management standpoint. And I think that is that's probably the stepping stone to just all cloud all the way. Brian, like you were talking about before, I feel like there still is a stepping stone that you have to take, but there's so many things to fully go to cloud that companies have to become accustomed to and to sort of mentally and technically overcome before they can go full cloud and just put everything there. And I think this is that stepping stone. And in 5 years, maybe it's not going to be a problem. I get worried when people talk about hybrid cloud and they mean like cloud bursting and stuff like that, where they're hosting stuff elsewhere. That's a different discussion, and I think is not. I think if you can host your desktops in the cloud and you've already come to terms with that, then you might as well just do it all in the cloud, like, and not have them both. But in general, I think that Microsoft is really has turned a corner. How is it that Microsoft seems cool right now? Is it cool to think Microsoft is cool? Because
it's bandwagon.
They are.
I do too. I play this game in my head, and I've been playing this game in my head forever. Like, what would happen if I worked for a vendor? Like, what vendor would I want to work for? What would it be like? What would I do? And to be honest, most of my thinking has been in the context of, you know, what would happen if I had to work for a vendor? Like, I always view it as like a negative thing. Like,
right. Like, what kind of car am I going to get?
How shitty is my life? Because the thing is, you know, I always felt no matter what happens in my life, I can always join the military. Like, I'm not going to become homeless.
You can't do that now. It's like Stripes.
I can't do that now. I'm too old. Yeah, exactly. And
do 100 push-ups. I dare you.
Oh, I couldn't do 100 push-ups between now and next week if aggregate. I've got some other issues to work out. But the thing is, you know, I look at that, though, and I think about, especially, too, like, I'm kind of getting sick of the city of San Francisco and thinking about other places to live. And, you know, I've got friends in Seattle, and they're all like, oh, move here. And I'm like, hey, you know, what would I do? I don't know. But the, you know, Microsoft, it does seem cool. And for me, it was Office 365 and looking at how Office 2016 integrates with all that. And I just actually, unrelated, went through the Office 365 new business setup, like set up a new domain and set up an email server. And, not setting up an email server, setting up the email service from Microsoft and Office 365 and, you know, Link and Yammer and Skype integration and OneDrive and all stuff. And it's just cool. And, you know, you look at the devices, I mean, the Surface, you know, you see more and more Surface devices out in the world now. You know, Gabe, I think you wrote an article a few weeks or maybe a month ago about the iPad Pro, because people are talking like, oh, the iPad Pro is a laptop killer.
But yeah, except you have to make it into a laptop to make it a laptop killer.
Yeah.
Like, you have to add a keyboard and add a stylus and add all these things. And then at that point in time, it costs as much as a MacBook Air.
Yeah.
And so, you know, go get a Surface Pro.
Doesn't run any apps, right. Yeah. And then, you know, we talked a long time ago about the whole, like, Windows 10, we like the whole Mac versus Windows conversation at this point is truly just based on hardware.
The software I own works only on OS X.
Yeah, that, like, I bought a bunch of licenses for software that are just their Mac only. But you know, I couldn't care less. Like, my app is my browser in Office. I mean, like, what else do I need, you know? So, so definitely sort of, if Microsoft jumped the shark, you know, I don't know, with their crazy policies and, like, Vista and all that kind of stuff, you know, they jumped back in the past year, I'd say.
And I mean, Vista was 9 years ago. So they've been repairing that for 9 years. And then they got there with Windows 7 a little bit and then fell back off again with Windows 8. And this is just from the Windows side of things, right? But the whole time they have been gearing up Azure, and now that Ballmer has stepped down and Nadella's in there, and they're even more cloud focused. I mean, Microsoft is cool.
They still have some whiffs, you know?
Oh yeah.
Like Windows they can afford Mobile to. Doesn't seem to be catching on so yet as a phone OS. And, you know, do you see that Ballmer is now criticizing Nadella, saying they have to embrace Android and just make it so that Windows Phone can run Android apps, like, full on.
Does 2010 Ballmer believe what's coming out of 2015 Ballmer's mouth?
I don't know. I said that about Donald Trump too, but
yeah, exactly.
So, but yeah, it's
they tried to embrace Android and then they pulled that away. The Android bridge for Windows, universal platform bridge for Android or whatever it's called, was a thing when I wrote about it a couple of months ago, and now it has been pulled back. And that was the thing that allowed you to run Android apps natively on Windows 10 mobile via something like the POSIX subsystem from back in the day, if you remember. They basically made the Android open source project subsystem and added a couple of Microsoft services in there to emulate some Android things that they couldn't just natively get. But apparently that didn't pan out all that well, so it has not been released.
That's cool because the concept, I like it because, you know, Jack talks about the difference between the Android open source project and the Android you get from Google is the Android you get from Google has all the Google mobile services integrated. So it's got Google Mail and location services and storage mm-hmm. services and authentication and everything. And Microsoft tried to write the API so that you still use the same Google mobile services API. It just translates right. all to Microsoft API instead. But you know what's interesting here is there's this conversation about the future of mobile applications and how a lot of companies are actually starting to move away from actual mobile applications because mobile apps are
you gotta deal with code bases and fragmentation and
and from user standpoint devices. the barrier for a user to install an app is pretty huge. You know, when you're looking at just regular web pages, you can visit 100 different web pages in a day and not even think twice of it, which is a sort of like you using 100 different web apps in a day. And for you to get a mobile app onto your device, it requires like a lot of trust and faith, and you might think you want this app and you have to love this company and love this app, and then everyone's devices are running out of space and all that sort of thing. And how a lot of companies are really starting to back away from actually creating mobile apps and going back to creating just richer mobile-based websites. And so ironically, if Apple and Google can't sort out their whole like App Store problem, you know, the fact that Microsoft does not have an ecosystem around mobile apps might actually not end up mattering.
Yeah.
They backed into that one.
Yeah, you know, I mean, but it's funny.
It's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, and we don't, you know, we're so early. I mean, we forget that mobile apps didn't exist until what version of iOS? So iOS 2 or 3 to offer third-party apps. So that wasn't until like 2008 or 2009. Like we're less than 10 years since like mobile apps were a thing. And so, you know, look at the direction of how airplanes looked in like 1911 and look at, you know, the 787 today. So, you know, it's a very different world. Now versus what it was when this technology was new. And I think we might be 10 years from now being like, man, remember when we had to like install apps on our phone?
Yeah.
So maybe Windows Phone has a future.
Absolutely. And look at Google, because even Google is doing this, what do they call it? Like the drive-by app installation. So you can actually get some code from a website that is able to more richly interact with your phone and the phone hardware and kind of run natively. So imagine like JavaScript enhanced a little bit, and then you install quote unquote by, you know, visiting the web page, and then that app or whatever is sort of like removed again as the space is needed on the device, like automatically in the background. So yeah. I like it. So Claudio, let's talk about VMware. Do you interact with them much, Claudio?
Well, not really. Not as you know, dealing with people at VMware or as a partner or anything. But being a consulting business, of course, we deal with the product and so on. But as a company, not really. I don't think they like me that much.
Do you like their direction? Do you like what's happening with them in the EUC space?
I like in ways, but for me, you know, they are too much about vaporware, you know what I mean? Showing shit that no one never knows if they will ever release. And they do some odd, weird acquisitions every once in a while. You know, they like to acquire old stuff, old technologies. So they're kind of a weird company right now in the EUC. I hope Sean, that we all know, he can do a great job changing that mindset and the direction. So if he can pull it off, I think we're going to see great things out of VMware. But if the guys that want to keep doing the marketing fight and all that bullshit that we have known them for, if they keep doing it, well, then, you know, nothing is going to change, really.
You know, it occurs to me, I don't think we've had Sean on a podcast since he went to VMware. And he's probably our number one podcast guest. We probably had him on more podcasts over the years than anyone.
Yeah, probably.
We need to see if we can get some of his time. It's funny because I've had briefings from VMware with Sean. And it's funny because, like, the junior PR person on the phone who does the introductions is
yeah, doing the introduction, right?
Yeah, so do you guys know each other? And we're like, I've heard of him. Like, sometimes it's like, yeah, he's literally sitting in my living room right now, and I'm in my office. Like, we're 10 feet from each other having this call.
Yeah.
We were joking. It's funny how, like, some of these guys that we've known forever, you know, Ruben was an SE when we met him, and then he became CTO at PQR, and now he's CTO at Atlantis, and Sean is, you know, a local engineer, local consultant in Chicago, and now he's a CTO at VMware, and, you know, we're still doing the same exact thing that we've been doing forever.
Yeah.
These other guys have moved on, and that's not a bad thing.
Claudio's moving up the chain.
Yeah, Claudio's in that club, too, you know? Claudio's still
yeah, but he sold a company or two in the meantime, though.
Yeah.
So.
You guys sold companies, too.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
We're on the same boat, man.
Yeah. So, Claudio, who else do you like out there? You know, in your days of consulting and working with customers and seeing stuff, are there any other vendors out there who you love that you wish more people would consider?
Well, there are several. You remember, like, I spoke at Bright Forums many times about everything else that is out there on SBC, on RDS, that people don't even know. So there is a lot of products and solutions out there that are pretty cool, that work well, and depending on the use case, and that's the key thing for me, it's the use case. I'm not tied to any vendor. I want to solve a problem for the customer, so whatever the tool is, that's what we are going to deploy. So there are many interesting vendors out there. The one that, of course, I have a soft spot for is Parallels now. Not only because of the history, but because really, you know, the guys have money, they have a huge customer base on other business that are more related really to something like the cloud with all the ISPs they have with their solution. So I think they can do a lot in the upcoming, you know, maybe in the next 6-12 months, we'll see a lot of really cool stuff coming out of them. And technology wise, like, one thing that we are all seeing these days, all the container stuff, the app virtualization is still going strong with different takes on that, like FSLogix. So I like the guys that try to think out of the box, you know. They are small vendors and they see the same problem as everyone else, but they take a different approach. So that's what I think I'm keeping an eye on all these companies that are off the well-known road and path.
That's tough for those. I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges is how do you get your name out there? How do you get access to that mind share? You know, I think a lot of the companies, especially since we've been at TechTarget, and, you know, TechTarget makes their money by selling, you know, marketing, by leads and banners and events and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, anymore, you can't just, it's not just about having a Twitter account and, you know, buying some banner ads and showing up at a conference. I mean, you know, in order to get your name actually out there and kind of get integrated into people's mindset, you know, that's tough for these little companies. And I feel like every day there's more and more companies that we're learning about that we just didn't even know existed that solve a great problem.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's 55 minutes into this podcast. Claudio, anything that's else on your mind? Anything that you're talking with customers about? Anything that comes up that, you know, people in general who are in the terminal server VDI space, you know, what questions do they ask you? What do you like to talk about?
Well, they always ask me, "Is really RDS dead?" You know, that's the first question. And is Microsoft buying Citrix? That's the second one. So, well, my key thing is don't think RDS or anything like that is dead. We're going to keep seeing this for probably forever. As long as there is an old app out there, there will be an RDS server to serve that app. So don't kill it.
How do you like the are the protocol wars over between RDP and HDX?
I would say for most cases, yes. But if you get into niches, well, then there will always be a niche where something is better. So for me, I think about the 80%, you know, the 85% of the world. For these people, it's good enough.
And that's that meaning RDS, or pardon me, RDP remote effects.
Oh, yeah. RDP remote effects, even RDS.
Well,
if you know how to get around it, it's probably good for 80% of the customers out there.
And I think that's probably the same for all the protocols, though, too. Like, all of them are good for just about everybody. And there are, you know, little nuances for each one where one excels over the other. But for the most part, from the protocol wars standpoint, you know, I think that, you know, everything is fine for almost all the use cases out there. But yeah, but and remote effects is no different.
Yeah, exactly.
So, preview Briform 2016. You will be submitting sessions. Do you have any ideas what you want to talk about this year?
Yeah, for sure. Like, one of the sessions that I'll definitely submit is, we see all these people that listen to the podcast. They are all, not all, but a lot of them are techies, nerds, and they are always thinking about doing something at home so they can try products, like building a lab. So one of the sessions that I will submit is how to build a lab and how to decide what to do on your home lab. Because it's more complicated than people think. It's all about, do I want something portable that I can carry around? Do I want something that I can run any crap on it? Doesn't matter how much RAM it takes. Do I have an unlimited budget? So there are so many questions that I think it's worth putting into a session. Like, okay, this is how you build a lab. These are the paths you can take. And this is how much money it may cost you at the end of the day.
So it's not just go to AWS, sign up for virtual instances, and call it good?
Well, if they can put wheels on AWS and I can carry around, yeah, then AWS is all you need, man.
You know, and that we've had sessions like that in the past, and I definitely encourage you to submit that, because I believe that's also something that changes year to year. You know, economics change, hardware changes, what people need to do changes. And because anymore, you know, 10 years ago, the lab was, you build a server, you put, you know, you enabled RDSH, you put Citrix on it, and that was all you needed to kind of like test everything. And now there's so much more in terms of all these different services that have to integrate together, and it's not as simple as, oh yeah, just install a Windows VM and off you go.
Exactly. Yeah, you can do so much on a small lab that, yeah, got complicated pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, Claudio, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today and to chat. I'll be looking forward to the blog articles that I want to read from you. As a quick program note, so Justin, our engineer, and he's our video editor and podcast editor, podcast engineer, who's been with us for about 6 years, I think. Is that right, Justin?
It's like five and a half.
Five and a half?
Yeah.
This is your last podcast.
It is.
This is Justin's last week as a TechTarget employee.
We have done many podcasts.
Yeah.
I should probably look how many, but.
And we have changed the way we've done our podcast several times for the better each time. But man, if you think back to the original, like Brian Madden TVs.
Whew. Hey, those were good.
After you got involved.
But yeah, you are, you're leaving TechTarget. Can you talk about what your new job is? Because it's very cool.
Yeah. So I will be going to work at Tesla, and it's in their body repair program, and it'll be doing video and graphics and other stuff like that, to basically explain how to fix Teslas. So it should be pretty interesting.
Do you get a Tesla?
I do not get a Tesla, but I've been told that I can potentially borrow them. So
and Tesla is here. You know, Justin lives in the Bay Area here in San Francisco. Tesla is headquartered in the Bay Area also. Like, you work at their office, I guess?
So for the first week, I'll actually be in an office that's literally right off the assembly line. And it's apparently so noisy, they're going to be moving to a new office very shortly after that.
What but with it being on an assembly line and all.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it's cool. It's very cool. You just, like, you walk down along the cars, and they're just getting all put together.
Do you get a discount on a Tesla? Or?
I do not. And I've actually been told that even Mr. Musk himself does not get one, a discount. So.
So, yeah, my first, when I heard you're working in their body repair group, I'm like, wait, do you, like, sling Bondo on the weekends?
Well, but, it's just, you know, they've sold a lot of cars now, so they have to worry about repairs. You know, it's gotten to that point.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
Oh, make sure you post the videos on brianmadden.com.
We were joking that...
Tesla detective.
That, yeah, like, yeah. Tesla detective. There's probably a bigger audience just in San Francisco of Tesla owners than there are worldwide at brianmadden.com, you know, listeners.
Yeah, finally, videos that people will want to pirate.
But it's my biggest question is, do employees of Tesla get to bring their friends to give them tours of the Tesla factory?
Ooh, that was my question, too.
I don't know, but I'm hoping yes, because, I would assume so.
Yeah. So next time Gabe's in town... We'll let you like, you know, work there a day or two before you start asking for all these favors, like letting your friends come and visit.
Hey guys, is it cool if I bring my friends over?
Yeah. Like you're in orientation, they're showing you how to fill out your paycheck forms and you know, your phone's going off nonstop.
We're at the front door.
Yeah. No, but that's awesome. I mean that's you know, from our standpoint, we'll be sad to lose you as a coworker, but you know, congratulations. That's awesome.
Well, thank you. I'm very excited, but it's been just an incredible pleasure working with you guys. We've done a lot of really cool things over the years that I don't think anyone else at Tech Target probably has ever done, for sure.
Yeah.
And probably will do. So just like all our videos, our travels, we've done really great stuff here.
Yeah. You've upped our game a lot. So thank you.
It's been time. Yeah.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been a blast.
You know, we should maybe do a podcast. Your last day is Friday. Maybe we should do something on, like, another podcast on Friday, just like reminiscing about, because all these videos we do, you know, mm-hmm. we've had some interesting locations and some interesting ways to shoot and some interesting, you know, like even as recently as last week we did a video, which is not out yet. It's for Simplivity. And it required us to rent out a grocery store. We had to shoot in a grocery store, and we can't, you know, grocery stores are open to the public during the day. So we went to this grocery store at 8 o'clock at night and shot all night while we had exclusive access to, you know, have our run of the place. And there's a lot of, there's been a lot of fun things over the years. Well, so
porn theaters, cliffs, drones.
Theaters. That's true. I've been looking at all the stuff that I have to catalog and pass on to, Mariah, you know, and, we own a lot of cool things, like a drone. You know, we've used a drone, so
we do
good stuff.
You mean the aerial camera platform?
Exactly, correct. That now has to probably be registered with the FAA or something.
Right, yeah, because it's a big one. So, yeah, that's cool. Well, so we'll definitely do something this week. But, yeah, so congratulations on that.
And, hey, how's your schedule? Is that okay? Like, can you run it? Because you're going to have to run the board for it.
maybe that'll be Mariah's trial by fire.
Oh,
ooh,
there we go.
I like it.
Yeah.
So cool. All right. Well. So on that note, you know, good luck to you. And we'll. What happens to Justin Love's VDI account? I guess that account retires now, right?
I mean, to be fair, I think I only posted to it twice a year anyway. So.
Right. Well, you've got a fair amount of followers, right?
I did pretty well because at Bryforum, I would like live tweet Bryforum stuff, and people would they loved that. So.
Justin Love's, because you have a real Twitter account for your.
I do.
Like,
it's just life. Justin Meisinger. Yeah.
Yeah, but you got 240 followers on. You can auction off your.
You want to buy it?
Well, awesome. Well, anyway, so yeah, we'll talk more. Claudio, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you, gents. Awesome.
And to Gabe, as always, thank you. Jack is traveling. I think he's traveling today. He's somewhere. So for the final time today, our engineer, Justin Meisinger, our. Project manager and future engineer, Mariah Lyons, thank you for all the work you do for us. And we will see you all soon on a future BrianMadden.com live podcast.